Dogs are an important part of our lives. That means protecting them from parasites. Ask your vet about NexGard Plus, afoxolaner, moxidectin, and pyrantel chewable tablets. NexGard Plus chews provide one-and-done monthly protection against fleas, ticks, heartworm disease, roundworms, and hookworms. Plus, they're delicious and easy to give. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurologic disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventive. Ask about NexGard Plus Chews.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Roto-World Football Show. It's Thursday, March 21st. I'm Patrick Dardy, along with Denny Carter and Kyle Dvorchik. Briefly forgot your guys' names. Yeah. Free agency is in its death rattle. Like the only unsigned players are like OBJ and MVS. Lots of guys with acronyms. Allen Robinson used to have an acronym. ARB.
A-Rob.
A-Rob, that's right. Or he was like AR2 or something because he was the second. But the signings are drying up. We're going to talk about Mike Williams signing with the Jets. We're going to talk about Deontay Foreman signing with the Browns. This is how desperate we are. We're going to use that as like a launching point, though, for a larger discussion on the Browns offense. I was inspired by a recent podcast appearance on a little show of my friend, who I know personally, Patrick Crane. Neither of you guys know him.
I've heard he's a good person.
He's a bad guy. But he knows a lot about him. Now Pat is such a good guy. We're going to talk about the Browns offense. We're going to talk about some smaller, kind of more under-the-radar signings you guys like. We'll touch on Michael Gallup and OBJ, you guys kind of pulling up the rear of the market. If we have time, we're going to get to some Gus Edwards talk. Denny, let's talk about Bo Nix and Michael Penix. Kyle and I both confidently informed him are bad and are not worth talking about.
To be clear, I said, Pat, it's a good take that, they're probably bad. We're talking about good fits. And, good players generally find good fits. And I don't know if they're good. Does not mean I don't have 30 minutes of content.
And Denny might have some. Denny always has interesting stats. So Denny's going to have some stats, it sounds like. Yeah. Michael Penix and Bo Nix. But, this is the Road Rule Football Show. We got a riff. And so some weeks it's like before the show, I'm like, oh, my God, what are we going to talk about? There's a guy who did something. A lot of people doing things this week. A lot of people filling out brackets, which are, of course, already utterly destroyed. A lot of interpreters embezzling millions of dollars and then betting them on DraftKings parlays. And do you guys have any NCAA tournament or Shohei Ohtani thoughts? Because a lot of times the best riffing topics, when they're too obvious, there's just nothing to say. And I throw them to you, and you guys are just like, oh, yeah, the guy.
Yeah, I mean, it seems bad. It seems bad for baseball that the biggest star in decades.
The first famous baseball player in 20 years probably didn't need to immediately – have a extinction level gambling scandal,
right? I mean, is there potential? I don't know anything about baseball. I read the piece on it today, and so I have some understanding of it. Is there potential for this to be like curtains?
I mean, if only if it was proven that he was directly betting on baseball, Shohei Ohtani himself. Interpreter could have been betting on Angels games, and even that. You see, here's why it doesn't matter. And then Rob Manfred just throws down a smoke bomb and disappears.
That's perfect. It is a smoke bomb scenario to a T. Like, you need a picture of Ohtani with his driver's license looking at the camera saying, like, I'm excited to bet on the Padres this week. Otherwise, it's like, really? He's too valuable. They're not going to let him fall.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Look. His contract is a disaster anyway, even without this, right? I mean, this is not going to work out. This is going to be bad.
There's a lot of baseball reasons. Well, first off, they just never work out. Also, and it assumes that he's going to remain an elite pitcher. It also assumes last year was not an outlier hitting campaign for him.
Right. It's a lot of assumptions for $1 billion or whatever he's getting. And also, he's not pitching this
year? He's not pitching. He had the old Tommy John.
All right.
Second of his career, which is always – It's almost literally borderline unprecedented to have success after two Tommy Johns. So.
Right, right. So I'm more confident than ever after this short exchange that that's the worst contract in sports history. It's going to eclipse Deshaun Watson's by a good margin.
Hey, real quick, by the way, how come neither of you guys filled out a bracket?
For what? Do we have to?
Did you guys not read your texts?
Nah, I didn't read what? That.
You, Lawrence. And Denny,
wait, no, you're right. Oh, I did. The reason I didn't fill it out.
Yes, you didn't. No one even responded.
Sorry.
I remember seeing this. No, I remember seeing this and thinking, I'll get around to that. And in the back of my head thinking, there's no way I get around to that.
No, so I had just filled out a bracket for family and friends. And then I saw yours and I was like, I'll just fill in. I'll just like put in the same picks. And like Kyle, I was like, I'll do that in like 20 minutes. And then 20 minutes passed and I forgot. Sorry.
Yeah, I should have followed up. I should have forced you guys to do that. But
it's incredible that I like March Madness is very fun. It's a very easy concept, very fun to just throw brackets away. And you strong armed me into a baseball 26 round, like managed weekly league. 27, Jesus Christ.
It's managed too. Yeah.
Managed weekly league, but you couldn't strong arm me into the March Madness bracket. I still got like 15.
Well, though. It was a soft sell. I didn't use the strong arm tactics the way I did for the baseball.
I will say that I'm enjoying March Madness from a DFS perspective because a fella named Enrique Freeman of the Akron Zips is going berserk at the moment. He's winning me some money.
Kid from Akron, bless up. Let's go.
I'll just say if I were BYU, I would have considered not being the worst team in the entire field. Would have considered that.
That was so obvious, though. Come on. No one really had any hope.
Right? I started 0-2. Thankfully, I haven't lost any Final Four teams yet. I couldn't force you guys to join my pool. You know who could force someone to do something was Aaron Rodgers forced the Jets to sign Mike Williams, we are assuming. But it's actually a good signing, ?
Well, that's how you know Aaron Rodgers wasn't involved.
That's true. Yeah,
like, I was going to say.
Mike Williams supposedly said he hasn't talked to Aaron Rodgers yet. He's like, yeah, I'm going to reach out to him first thing tomorrow.
Please, give me a break.
Pat, he's never played with Aaron Rodgers, so therefore Aaron Rodgers has no idea who he is.
That's true. He probably doesn't know which Mike Williams this is.
No, he has no clue. Mike Williams drafted in like 1998 or whatever.
This is the Mike Williams who was posting a career high 2.33 yards per route run before tearing his ACL last season, a very limited sample size. But it seems like his deep game should complement Garrett Wilson's like all-around game, kind of free up Garrett Wilson to be moved all over the formation to really wreak havoc if Aaron Rodgers, of course, stays out. Aaron Rodgers has always been an elite deep ball thrower. Maybe doesn't pick his spots quite enough anymore. Like he needs to throw deep more often probably at this stage of his career. But it seems like a good fit for the offense if Mike Williams is healthy. Kyle, you were nodding more vigorously than Denny. Do you agree with the take that the Jets have had kind of a quiet offseason? Expectations are very muted since it's the 40-year-old quarterback coming off a torn Achilles. But do you think this is a good signing for the Jets in what is an all or nothing season in 2024?
Yeah, I really like the flyer. I still think it should not rule them out from adding receiver or tight end through Brock Bowers through the draft, but they needed more than Garrett Wilson. It was very obvious last year that, like, as much as I love Breece Hall, the fact that he was the team's clear number two receiver when he's a running back was a very strong indictment of the other receivers on the team. The fact that Alan Lazard, who's making like tens of millions of dollars, was healthy scratch is a very strong indictment of the receivers on the team. I think the Mike Williams signing is a really strong number two, maybe 2B option. Hopefully they add more receiving talent through the draft, but they needed this. And as you pointed out, Mike Williams was on pace as in he played slightly less than three games.
So was it three or four games? I couldn't remember.
It was three. It was like 98% of three games. He went down late in the third, I believe. Three games. I get that it's a small sample. He was looking really good in those three games. He was on pace for a career year by a wide margin in those three games. And he's not that expensive, and he's not a long-term commitment for the team, which makes sense. Aaron Rodgers is also not a long-term commitment for the team. So I will say I think this is a really strong signing. Do I think it works out? I'm not sure. He's a 30-year-old receiver coming off of a torn ACL, but do I think it's a smart financial decision for the team? Absolutely. These are the types of upside shots you should be taking, especially when your window for winning is like 2 years tops, right? Like Rodgers ain't playing in 3 years.
At the absolute most.
Right, yeah.
Maybe he needs to do four more years. Am I right? Yikes, that was groan worthy. Yeah. Danny, do you agree this is the kind of flyer that's difficult to poke holes in? Like,
yeah,
Danny wants to be a Rodgers hater, but you kind
well,
of
well, okay, I know. And let me just point out that he typically, yes, he is a very good deep ball thrower. The last time we saw him in the year 2022, not so much. Can I share some numbers?
You can. And before you share the numbers, I mean, it was a transition year for their skill core, so on and so forth. But it, yeah, it was the year. It is the injury has made it easy to memory hole that Rodgers was beginning to look like a diminished player in 2020.
Yes. So
what did the stats say about that?
Yeah, he remained aggressive. He threw downfield, meaning at least 20 yards through the air on 15.5% of his attempts. That was the seventh highest rate in the league.
A lot higher than I remembered.
Right. The problem was that his turnover worthy play rate per Pro Football Focus was 11.5%. That ranks seventh highest in the league. And his adjusted completion rate on those downfield throws ranked way down there, 25th alongside, Justin Fields and Jimmy Garoppolo. So I feel like there may be some issue with the downfield throwing, but the volume will definitely be there because this Jets offense has nobody outside of Garrett Wilson and Breece Hall.
Well, the volume will be there, say, if the protection is good enough for him to even throw deep.
And they put a lot of effort, obviously, into shoring up that offensive line. The offensive line knowers seem to like it, like what they did. So I'll go with that. Sure.
And the narrative, as I sort of said in 2022, is that he needs reps. It was an undermanned supporting cast. He had no experience, no chemistry with any of these guys. That problem hasn't really been solved.
No, it hasn't.
He didn't get any reps with anyone last year. And like you said, he's never played with Mike Williams is not going to be playing this offseason. He's not going to be ready to go to probably right around week one. But yeah, still, the Jets, after a really bad offseason last year, we have to remember we were all first guessing their moves they made in their receiver core. It's hard to first guess Mike Williams in a gangrene uniform.
Yeah, Mike Williams has always had tantalizing upside. Let's just say that.
He can't wait to be white hot and then land directly on the back.
I would say if the Jets could invest in some classes for Mike Williams to learn how to fall more gracefully. I mean, there's got to be something, it's right? Insane. I mean,
ballet. He feels like a receiver who could do ballet. I remember growing up, I think it was Hines Ward. I heard took ballet classes consistently. I was like, that's pretty cool. And the fact that it increases your body control is also cool.
I think
that's a good starting point for him. Like Pilates, maybe.
Tua did some sort of
jujitsu.
Yep. In the offseason. And he avoided major injury. He seemed to know how to fall. Some guys don't know how to fall. Mike Williams, man, he's one of them. Oof.
Aaron Rodgers is a big fan of mental jujitsu.
Too soon. Which he practices on his enemies.
He practices on his enemies. Mike Williams, I mean, is he gonna be a top 36 receiver, by the way?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I'm in for that. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Garrett Wilson, what's he gonna? Is he still top 12?
Oh, yeah. I mean, with Rodgers back, I totally agree. The fact that we're all kind of just writing off the fact that Rodgers last year in Green Bay was pretty mediocre to say the least is interesting that we're all just ignoring that.
Yeah. Dude,
that season alone would have stomped the past 5 years of Jets quarterback play, in which Garrett Wilson last year was also a wide receiver one. So yes, he is.
Well, Aaron Rodgers mediocre in 2022. At least he's gotten healthier and younger since then. So real good news. Is there any chance whatsoever Aaron Rodgers is a top 12 fantasy quarterback in 2024?
I would say yes if he had any sort of mobility or scrambling left in him, but I think that it's safe to assume that he does not. I think he'll be more of a distributor, more of a point guard in this offense. And this team could be good with him in that role. Fantasy-wise, I think he's going to be strictly a streaming sort of guy.
Yeah, Rodgers was already doing a lot more self-stacking, I feel like, in 2022. And he hasn't really been underrated for his mobility, but it wasn't the first thing that came to mind when talking about Aaron Rodgers because he was so good at many other things. But the mobility was always very important for him. And totally agree with Denny. Hard to see how that's going to remain. Yeah, man, how many rushes did he have? 34 carries for 94 yards in 2022. Mm-hmm. And yeah, he hasn't run more than 40 times since 2019, where he used to routinely run 50 to 60 times a season. So that part of his game is long, long gone. Long gone from the Denver Broncos is Jerry Jeudy. He's in Cleveland, along with Deontay Foreman, which is where we'll start. I mean, what do you think this says about Nick Chubb's health? He's supposedly like on pace in his recovery from his really severe knee injury. Yeah. This knee injury then that they started claiming wasn't as severe. That's always a great sign for your knee injury. It actually wasn't quite as catastrophic.
I mean, on camera, on the TV, on my TV, it looked pretty severe.
Is Deontay Foreman going to be fantasy relevant this season? And can we, let's just start actually, Kyle, with, can we actually trust Nick Chubb, who was a metronome in the backfield before this injury?
No, yeah, I peeped into some underdog drafts and he's massively overdrafted. I mean, like, look, is there a world in which he injured his knee roughly like within weeks, the same week?
It was in September. It was in September.
Yeah, within the same week that Mike Williams did, and they've downplayed his injury. And Mike Williams, I'd bet, probably does come back for week one. Is there a world in which it turns out Nick Chubb's knee injury was in roughly the same ballpark as severe as Mike Williams? I guess there is that world in which Nick Chubb is playing in the first few weeks of the season. Do I buy that's the world we're living in? No, I don't believe there's a chance in hell that he's playing in week one. And I think for a player who is so explosive, so physical as he was, injuring not only his ACL, but probably other multiple other parts of his knee, I don't think he's playing early in the season. I'd be concerned if he comes back to the same level he was previously. I'd be concerned that he comes back to the same role that he was previously, because if I'm the Browns and I want to prolong Nick Chubb's career, which has already been beaten up by a drastic knee injury, I'm not giving him 20 carries a game the moment he comes back. So I think there are so many hurdles from a fantasy perspective for him to clear. Also, being on the roster, he remains a cut candidate given his contract. I don't think they cut him. I think they either just kind of strong arm him into a pay cut or extend him, which just splits up his current cap hit into 2 years. But he also still has to be on the roster, and they've added multiple running backs this offseason. I can't imagine drafting him and projecting anything other than a few late season spurts.
Man, yeah, I that's a great way to lay it out, Kyle. And I think that we're going to see a lot of copium from people who will take him. You know, where is he going right now in best ball? Like third round?
The best pure runner banner flyers are going to be coping real, real hard.
I'll pull it up in a second, but he's okay.
By the summer, I think that there will be enough steam, enough reporting where it'll be like, okay, he might be ready for week two or three or four, and then he'll get the full workload by midseason. That's a lot of cope. And we're going to see that. And you're going to have to trust that Nick Chubb is superhuman. Maybe he is. Maybe that bet will pay off. I think it's a bad bet.
Another potential hurdle for Nick Chubb. So Pat Corain asked me, like, you know, man, this Jerry Jeudy extension is pretty weird, right? And we were both talking about, like, yeah, who were they even bidding against for this Jerry Jeudy extension? Yeah, like, what was the logic here? And Pat's take was maybe that they're finally getting ready to change the Kevin Stefanski system from this run-based, balanced-obsessed offense. They're going to go more in on Deshaun Watson's strengths, become much more of a pass-first attack. Denny, do you think there's any credence to that, that we're going to basically see a different Browns approach this season?
It's possible.
Pat was just guessing. He wasn't like saying was happening.
I mean, you're reading the tea leaves this time of year, and that would make sense because, I mean, theoretically, from a zoomed out standpoint, Amari Cooper, Jerry Jeudy, and David Njoku, and then a little splash of Elijah Moore. That's not a bad group of pass catchers. I mean, you can work with that for sure.
Say Sed Tillman's name. Say it.
It'd be the first time it's been said in like 12 months. So
I knew when I didn't say Tillman, I knew Pat was going to be like, no, this won't stand. But I refuse to say Tillman.
Do you remember your train of thought? Sorry.
I do. And that would make sense. And I guess it would make sense to just lean into this Deshaun Watson situation and be like, all right, buddy, like we gotta do it. We gotta base the offense around you now. Like I hope you're okay. I hope you're good. And if that works, then I guess it does make sense to get Jeudy on board long term and all this stuff. If it blows up in their face, if the Watson situation does, then the Jeudy signing will look really, really bad in hindsight.
It looks bad in foresight.
It does.
It looks even worse in hindsight. Kyle, do you have any counter take there? Or do you think it's a sign that the approach wasn't working? It didn't make sense. Kevin Stefanski is an amazing offensive coach, but it did seem like, especially seemed like in 2022, he wasn't changing the system. And that made a little more sense. Watson was coming out from a long suspension. It was mid-season. But it seemed like, it was just kind of the same old normal Kevin Stefanski offense last year. Do you think that they're finally getting the hint and making the adjustment?
Yeah, it just seems like we're speed running the 2023 offseason, like Browns trade for a downtrodden, formerly highly respected prospect at receiver. We get quotes about how they want their offense to be more explosive, which we did last year. We get quotes about them, oh, they're going to play with more wide receivers on the field, which we got last year. And while, like, yeah, they did do these things last year, at the end of the day, when rubber hit the road, it was Deshaun Watson's bad. We cannot throw the football. And that's the change that needs to happen. Is Deshaun Watson needs to play not just better football, but significantly better. In his first stretch of three games, they had a negative 2% pass rate over expected. He comes back and he's dinged up, so I don't entirely blame them for this, but still a negative 9% pass rate over expected in his next two full starts. All the additions they're making set them up to have the potential to pass more. But at the end of the day, if Deshaun Watson looks as bad as he has for the past, what is it, like maybe 12 or 14 games for the Browns, that he hasn't played that many, if he doesn't look significantly better, they probably will regress to the run-heavy Browns that they have been for years.
I made the point to Karain also that maybe Kevin Stefanski had his eyes open, like, man, even Joe Flacco could easily sling it in this offense, and maybe I need to, like, cut the guys loose a little more. Maybe that was like an eye-opening experience for Kevin Stefanski. A total, total prediction, like wish casting there.
Well, I mean, you're right, and Flacco was way better, like by every metric, by every measurement, than Watson was.
Flacco wasn't great either. Last year, we were talking at the end of the season, we're like, this has to come crashing down for Flacco. And the thing is, if it came crashing down, it would still, and it did eventually, would still be better than Deshaun Watson.
Exactly. So just to illustrate that point real quick, Watson last year, his success rate was 34th out of 39 qualifying quarterbacks. We're talking in the Aiden O'Connell, Josh Dobbs, Daniel Jones range on success rate.
The thing is, when he had success, it was on 27-yard completions and not 9-yard completions.
And it was, you know, I mean, his one good game was against the worst secondary in the NFL, the Titans.
So he had more than one good game. He legitimately had
like one good game.
I think he had one. I mean, it depends on how you say what you mean by good.
Sure.
I mean,
one game too, he went nuts in the first half that Thursday night. It didn't have to throw in the second half against the Jets. He had three touchdowns, 3 of 5 starts. He had a good run. Let's not say it was just one good game.
I don't know. I think it was.
I'm going to say. I'm gonna fact check you.
He had three touchdowns, 3 of 5 starts? What?
He did. Yes.
That's news.
Am I crazy? I don't see a single three touchdown game.
Then you were on the wrong year, I would have to assume. He did have three tutters, 3 of 5 starts. Three tutters against the Jets, against the Texans in the regular season, we must add, and against the Jaguars. Then he had 2 against the Rams, 2 against the Bears. So he never had fewer than 2, and he had at least 3 of 5.
Are you in the right season?
Yes, I am.
Are you
I'm literally 1,000,000,000% positive. And I'm looking at Joe Flacco's 2023 game log.
Oh, wait, I thought you were talking about Watson. We thought you were trying to cape for...
So like, what are you guys talking about?
Watson was better. Denny said Deshaun was bad.
Okay, sorry. Flacco was because we were talking about Flacco was going to have.
Denny, you were on the same page as I, right? Like, I'm not crazy.
No, yeah, that's why I was. I looked up the PFR, and I'm like, what? So Watson, just to be clear, Watson's success rate was around the Daniel Jones, Aiden O'Connell situation. Flacco's was slightly better.
Okay, I was getting a little confused there.
No, we all agree Flacco was better. Like, none of us disagree.
Well, we had been starting to talk. I thought what Denny was referencing at the end of the season, we're kind of like, Flacco's having some cool box scores, but he's also making a lot of turnover.
He's getting away with it.
Big. Yeah, he was getting away with it. And then we knew that he wasn't going to continue getting away with it. And then he didn't in very spectacular fashion. In a game none of us will ever forget. We'll be right back after this. We're closing in on opening day, but it's never too late to squeeze in another draft. So for those cramming before the regular season begins, grab your Roto-World Baseball Draft Guide. It's loaded with comprehensive positional rankings, projections, and player profiles to ensure your draft is a home run. Visit NBCSports.com/draftguide and use promo code BASEBALL24 to get 10% off at checkout.
Dogs are an important part of our lives, and keeping them protected is a top priority, especially against nasty parasites. That's why you got to check out NexGard Plus, efoxaconazole, moxidectin, and pyrantel chewable tablets. NexGard Plus chews provide one-and-done monthly protection that kills fleas and ticks, prevents heartworm disease, Plus, it treats and controls roundworms and hookworms. That's a whole lot of protection packed into a delicious beef-flavored, soft chew designed to make monthly dosing easy and enjoyable. So the next time you're at the vet, ask about NexGard Plus Chews. They're the one-and-done monthly parasite protection you want for your dog. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurologic disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventive.
Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Don't forget, find all your favorite NBC Sports shows and Amazon Music. Just head to Amazon.com/NBC Sports. Kyle, you think we're going to finish this slow draft before March 28th?
Not if I have anything to say about it. Screw this.
No, you haven't been one of our problem drafters.
I have been good.
There's been a few.
Oh, man.
Sorry to confuse everybody on Deshaun Watson and Joe Flacco, by the way.
Yeah. I'll say Roto-World writer Adit has sniped me a bunch. Not happy about that.
Yeah, Adit's drafting off a spreadsheet. You can tell.
I was going to ask you, our fellow blurber writer for Roto World, Adit, is drafting in my first ever baseball draft, which I already hate, 16 rounds in. is he drafting on the same spreadsheet as us? Because I feel like he's really...
I didn't give him the spreadsheet, but it must be similar. Very similar.
He's apparently a sharp in the baseball streets, which I don't like.
Can I share a quick fantasy baseball story with you guys?
You can.
Please do.
So I used to be big into, I think I told you guys, like huge into fantasy baseball. I would obsessively check it. My now wife, then girlfriend, was not a fan of that. So I went to Greece in 2008 with my now wife's family, right? And there was going to be very little internet connectivity. I didn't have a laptop. My phone was not going to work there. Okay, so I told my brother, like, you know, hey, my brother's 5 years younger. I said, I need you to be the caretaker of my fantasy baseball team.
Oh no.
For the next 3 weeks. Okay. And it was like in the heart of the season. Okay. And I'm like, you know, just be aggressive. Just keep making moves. Just fill out, just basically war of attrition. Get people in the lineup. He did not do one single thing. And I think I lost.
Like, that ruined baseball forever for you.
No. That didn't have to do, but I got back and I was like, now to take a big sip of coffee and check my baseball team.
I thought you were saying he did too much churn.
No.
He's like, he drafted Albert.
Did no
Pujols.
Churning. I was like, so you didn't make a single transaction? Is that what I'm to understand? He was like, I didn't know how.
How many transactions a week do you think I need to make?
this league only two or three, maybe three.
Oh, cool. Okay. Whew, I was worried you were going to say like eight.
No, you might have some weeks where you only make one or two.
Oh,
it's not head-to-head. Head-to-head increases the need for weekly transactions.
Cool.
This you need to churn a little bit because the rosters are deeper and this guys will be getting hurt constantly and stuff. But yeah.
Yeah, I know. I already drafted someone who got hurt, so cool.
Yeah, boy. It's been a bloodbath in baseball spring training, which is why you need the Roto-World Baseball Draft Guide to stay up on all the latest changes in news. Back to football. Like I said, free agency now, like day 12 or 13. It's dried up. All the players who are going to get meaningful contracts have already signed, almost all of them. We'll get to some who might in a minute. But what is a smaller – I have no criteria for this. But what is like a smaller, more under the radar – and nothing's under the radar in fantasy anymore. You can't say like Zach Moss and like, oh, Zach Moss is under the radar. I want to be in your league.
Right.
Really want to be in your league. Relax. Like, chill. I'm sorry. I didn't know. Yeah, but Denny. What's an under-the-radar signing? Or maybe this is, say, more like a second tier, since there's no such thing as an under-the-radar.
I mean, does Darnell Mooney count as a second
tier? He does. He counts.
Yeah.
He does.
I do. I like him in that role. Probably a downfield role. I just trust Zach Robinson, the Falcons coordinator.
Zach Robin, who, let's see here, has never called a single play, but you trust.
I don't care. You know what? Nope. He once shook hands with Sean McVay, and that's what matters to me. And so I think that he'll run like a good, possibly up tempo offense, pass heavy offense. And if it's pass heavy enough, then a guy like Mooney can get involved. Even if Pitts and Drake London, you know, do vacuum up a lot of the targets in this offense, I think Mooney will still be involved. And I think with a little intermediate involvement in this offense, I think that Mooney could be, you know, interesting with a high weekly ceiling. I think that's the thing he has that other guys in his range won't have, is a possible downfield shot or two.
He could be a matchup flipper type, which is always what he hinted at early in his Bears days, that he can make splash plays. It's the classic. He might have a big donut in your starting lineup, but he could also, like a second flex, a wide receiver three, a good tiebreaker is that, can this person actually flip this matchup?
And I was reading in the Athletic that league evaluators really high on Mooney coming out of college and remain high on him in free agency. I think that's why the Falcons look like they kind of overpaid a little bit for Mooney, because they really wanted him. And I think that that's a good sign about, you know, his potential in that offense.
Kyle, who's someone that comes to mind for you as a second tier free agent that we've probably already talked about a little, but that you want to talk about a little more?
Yeah, I'm glad we kind of skipped over him earlier. It was Deonta Foreman. Foreman's been he's been an incredible success story for an Achilles tear rebound, which his career hasn't been special since his torn Achilles, but the fact that he's come back from it at all in the NFL is an extreme rarity. And the fact that he's been relatively efficient over the past 2 years is even more of an anomaly. Last year, he was 26th in rush yards over expected per attempt, but 7th in success rate. Maybe not the most explosive runner, but extremely consistent. The year before that, he was 1st in success rate and 9th in rush yards over expected per attempt. More explosive and the most consistent running back you could find, getting what's more than asked of him. And I think he brings probably that physical element to the Browns that Nick Chubb will be, you know, taking away by not being there for, I imagine, the first month of the season, optimistically, just given how devastating his injury looked. I think he's a good complement to what they have in their backfield. If we talked about him too much, I had a really disgusting one, which was Braxton Berrios, because he's a really good returner. Dolphins re-signed him. Nothing to do with fantasy implications, but I think he's a good returner. He has an all-pro return nod to his name. I believe he is 7th in active kick return yards per attempt and 4th in active punt return yards per attempt.
Well, did you know he's also a friend of the show, that he's been on the show?
Oh, I'm glad I bumped him then. Let's go, Braxton.
We spoke to him in Las Vegas, Nevada.
And my guy has nice hair. And I think here's the thing about Berrios. He has nice hair, and he knows he has nice hair.
He did. He was exuding that he knew he had nice hair, just like someone else on this show.
I don't run my hands through my hair like Berrios does. I mean,
he was running his hands. He wanted to be camera ready even for the Roto-World Football Show.
He was into it. That was, by the way, that was the same interview where I embarrassed myself by asking Jaylen Waddle how it felt to beat the Broncos by 100 points, and then he told me I didn't play in that game.
Oh no.
And I said, yeah, I know. What I'm asking, how did it feel from the sideline, Jaylen?
You did recover nicely, actually. But and it doesn't matter how many details you double check. Sometimes you just forget the really important ones. Did you play in this game?
The receivers will get you.
Did you play? Yeah, I know. The receivers never forget a rep ever.
He let me go on too. I mean, he did. You couldn't have stopped me. You couldn't have said, buddy, I didn't play.
Really, really hung you out to dry. I mean, I was laughing. I was encouraging it. Denny, how many routes did he run this game? 42 routes. Beautiful. I'm not going to go down that road. But can Curtis Samuel count as like an under the radar, signing? The reason I like the Curtis Samuel to the Bills, a name familiar to everyone, someone who was just well paid on his most recent contract. But Curtis Samuel is the kind of player who time and again is just going to end up on a bad team, like he did with his most recent deal, the Commanders. He's like a shortcut type of player. He's the classic, like, we don't have any weapons. We don't have anyone who's dangerous with the ball in their hands, so we got to overpay for like the slasher type player. Yeah. So he's the kind of player who always ends up on bad teams, at least on their first like post-rookie contract. It's like the kind of who never gets set up to actually succeed. This time he's still very young for a guy signing a second post-rookie contract. And it just seems like a very fortuitous landing spot for him while he still has something left to offer as a weapon. And it's a really, really good signing for the Bills, who I just felt that acute lack of enough weapons a lot last year. It's kind of like how the Chiefs have become, like, even when the Chiefs had Tyreek Hill, remember, we were like, the Chiefs got to have a third weapon behind Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce. And that problem's only gotten worse. The Bills had just had been going down the same road, I felt like. Like, who is someone who can, like, make a play for the Buffalo Bills, especially with Stephon Diggs, like, not looking like Stephon Diggs? And the answer just didn't really exist last year for Buffalo. And he's the kind of guy who's so easily overrated because he's between positions. He's kind of a manufactured touch guy. So that's why they fail so often, I feel like, the slasher types, the weapon types. But they almost never end up somewhere like Buffalo with Josh Allen. And just very, very, very happy to see Curtis Samuel on a team where his unique skills might actually get put to use.
And, you know, Josh Allen kind of ceded to the check down trend last year, much more so than previous seasons. So that could be good for Curtis Samuel, who I thought in Washington, when he was healthy, kind of fun for fantasy. You got 6-7 catches every time he was out there for a full game.
Oh, and he was like a snap stealer too. It was like, man, they really like not snap stealer, target. They really like targeting Curtis Samuel over Terry McLaurin, huh?
Yeah.
Like, I know, like, you'd look back and be like, over the past 3 weeks, Terry McLaurin's target share is 20.1% and Curtis Samuel's is 19.8%.
I know.
And like you would say, like, oh, I think there's a talent discrepancy between those two. But targets are in some sense a talent, you know, descriptive measure. Yeah, so you gotta give Samuel a lot of credit for that.
Producer Adam points out, by the way, a lot of people have been playing up, understandably so, the narrative that Curtis Samuel is reuniting with former Panthers offensive coordinator, 1 year Panthers offensive coordinator Joe Brady, under whom Samuel had by far his career, the year they got him paid in 2020.
Man, yes, Carolina. That's a great point. Producer Adam comes through.
Brady got a bad rap in Carolina, by the way. I thought he was a really good.
Oh, he absolutely did. Unlike Ken Dorsey, who deserved to be fired last year in Buffalo, Joe Brady.
Well, let's not stir up past trauma.
Ken Dorsey has never been a more deserved firing.
Tyler Bass missed the field goal. That's why I got
that. Never been a more deserved fire. I lived in Cleveland when Hugh Jackson went like 1-31.
Hey, and they didn't fire him for a while.
They didn't fire him after either the winless season or the one win season. Yeah, I forget which one.
But yeah, they had to change the mojo, and they did. They did. There was the Bills did nothing wrong, guys. we can litigate this forever. I'm going to scan through some of these signings really quick.
It was a perfect firing. Is that what you're saying?
It was a perfect firing. So no one said Devontae Parker to the Eagles, huh?
Dude, I even thought about it. I was like, is there something I can do here?
Nope. No one said Trent Sherfield to the Vikings. No one said Devin Singletary to the Giants. The Texans re-signed Noah Brown.
Dude, I thought about that one too. I swear to God, I looked at it. Like, he did pop off for like two games in the middle of the season. So maybe that was one I should have looked into more, to be honest.
Singletary is a guy, obviously, I'm going to have him on every fantasy team this year. And as my RB1. I really do think the Giants will be okay being like, yeah, we're going into the season with him.
Oh, yeah, RB1. They're tanking. I mean,
they paid him a reasonable amount of money to suggest that maybe they would do that. Yeah,
they're tanking.
What are you talking about? They're all finished. They're all done if they have a bad season this year.
No, they are. I mean, they don't care if Dable gets fired.
It's crazy to tank in a must-win season, yet they are positioning themselves to absolutely tank.
I think they're just that bad of an organization.
Also, yeah, maybe true.
No one, by the way, this is actually not a bit. I talked about Curtis Samuel of the Bills. We have quite literally not spoken about Mac Hollins to the Bills. Is there really there? I'm dead serious.
No,
I'm not messing around. No, you think I'm serious.
I can't tell if you're serious.
Folks, I'm serious. This actually happened.
Hi, here's what I would say about Mac Hollins. He is ridiculously jacked for a receiver. I mean, way too much. You gotta relax, Mac. And then secondly, he eats with his hands. Apparently, he doesn't use utensils.
Yeah, that's brutal.
So that's all I know about that guy.
Did you guys know Dwayne Eskridge re-signed with the Seahawks?
I think I blurbed that one.
Nick Westbrook
entering his age 37 season.
Yeah, NWI, as he's known, re-signed with the Titans. Just scanning through some of these lower wattage. Chase Edmonds re-signed with the
Bucks. Hey, I should know this, and something I should have looked into before the show. Is Tyler Boyd signed?
No, he is not.
Nope.
And I feel like he's like maybe the last guy who might get kind of paid.
He should get some money.
There's a bit of a bidding war, it seems like. And now they're kind of like waiting each other out.
I feel like there's not much market for that guy, but maybe.
No, I mean, like he's getting more than like Pat brought up Mac Hollins. He's getting more than that kind of money, right? Like
he's getting 3 years, $18 million, I bet. Like maybe not 3 years. Maybe
3 years is a long time.
I was gonna say 2-10. So, but 12 is the same. Whatever.
It's gonna be higher than you think. I think it's gonna be like 212 or 214 or something.
I mean, he's a reliable enough guy. I said before free agency started, I wouldn't mind him in KC. Yeah.
Denny, you're wide receiver one because Denny's apparently gonna be zero RB and zero wide receiver this year. Hunter Renfrow currently unsigned. By the way,
It's gonna be your wide receiver. Look, all I know about Hunter Renfrow is that every time he gets on the field in a full time role, he becomes fantasy relevant. That's all I know.
Now, it seems that he never gets a full time role, but who's to count?
Real quick, did you guys remember? Just answer honestly. When this guy got cut, I did not know he was still on the team. Did you remember that Russell Gage was on the Bucks still when he got cut?
I remember he had a scary injury, but that's it.
I knew that one. Yeah. Will Fuller is still out there, folks. If someone can track down Will Fuller and that someone also knows an NFL agent, he's the best free agent right now.
Will Fuller is in hastily produced Netflix documentary territory on how like the disappearance of Will Fuller.
Wait, we got to give up the ghost on Will Fuller. It's been 4 years.
It hasn't been four.
Three.
It's like kind of been four.
I think it's been, has it been two full seasons? Yeah, wow.
Yeah, he didn't play last year at all. He didn't sign with the team. And the year before that, he was with, I believe, Miami and messed up one of his fingers and played almost no games for Miami. Yeah,
our guy, Bill Fuller, has played in two games since 2020.
Right. Yeah. Right. Oh, what are we talking about?
It's over. I literally just dropped him in Dynasty, like in the middle of last season.
Hey, by the way, speaking of receivers who disappeared, Kyle, is Josh Gordon in the UFL?
Still? Not that I know of, but that's a good question, actually.
That's no way for me to know. No way
for me there's no way for anyone to know.
We'll talk about some receivers who are disappearing, actually, right now. We'll begin. Who are we talking about here? Odell Beckham, who's supposedly drawing interest. I mean, this guy has more leaks in his favor than anyone in the history. They work, though. Like the Ravens paid him so much money last year. He had a 1.92 yards per route run. We know two is the cutoff for pretty good. He had a decent year, but just as he was getting hot, he suffered like a minor injury near the end of that Ravens-Browns Thursday night game, and then was like never heard from again.
Ravens-Bengals, maybe?
Yes, Ravens-Bengals. Sorry, the game with so many injuries. It was Ravens-Bengals.
Oh, yeah.
And, I mean, is this hopefully maybe – not hopefully, not to wish ill. Is this the last time we're talking about Odell Beckham on this show?
I mean, look, no, it's not, obviously. When he signs, it'll be a huge, huge deal. It'll dominate news for 48 hours because he was good 7 years ago.
Who do you think it's more money? He kept up all night working on his takes on OBJ.
Yeah, right. Who do you think it's more money, Tyler Boyd or Odell?
Boyd.
Tyler Boyd, I would think. So
the deal Odell got last year suggests that, like, maybe that name brand still suggests value, which, like, Denny, to your point,
maybe
it's going to be a news cycle as soon as he signs.
It's going to be, yeah, it's always huge when he's even talking to a team or working out for a team. Mm-hmm. If he couldn't emerge last year in that environment where you have a Ravens offense that's finally either balanced or pass heavy for most of the season, you don't have a dominant pass catcher in there because Mark Andrews misses, I guess, probably more than half the season. You have him and Zay Flowers were the only legit receiving threats, and they couldn't give him a full snap share, a full route share for whatever reason. They didn't see fit to do that. That's concerning. I will say the one thing Beckham has going for him from last year is that he had a pretty high target per route run. Not absurdly high, but higher than I thought. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, I think he led the team in that category. So he has that going for him, but wow, he has nothing else going.
So yeah, he was commanding targets, relatively speaking, and his efficiency, like I said, with the yards per hour run was still surprisingly decent.
Solid, yeah.
So yeah, whatever. We're going to be talking about him. We're probably not going to be talking about Michael Gallup again. Free agent. His yards per route run have barely been over one since he's been hurt. Wow. Like a guy whose efficiency was never the most efficient guy. This hasn't been the same since the injury. But it, do you guys see anything at all that makes like Michael Gallup like a reclamation case? Or if he couldn't do it in that high-flying offense last year, that it's just kind of over for him? A guy who deserved a better NFL fate,
yeah,
but it might just be over for him.
Yeah, that unfortunately describes it quite well. Like maybe there's some like Odell Beckham level reclamation project where if you only put him on the field for routes that are specifically designed for him, he can be kind of efficient because Odell was top 35 in PFF receiving grade and yards per route run. Like Denny said, he was strong in targets per route run. But part of that is the manufactured aspect of it, where when you only put a guy on the field for half of the team's routes and you design targets for him in those plays, his efficiency numbers are going to get bloated and they would not carry over to a 90% route rate. That'd be the optimistic outcome for Michael Gallup, who's, as Pat said, barely creeping over 1 yard per route run, which is a very, very low number over the past 2 years. The hope would be that he can be like a part-time role player deep threat who's significantly more impactful for an NFL team than he is for fantasy purposes, frankly.
Real quick, I said the news from free agency is almost over. We have some breaking sports news. The University of Arizona is not going to lose to a 15 seed this year. They're not going to just ruin everything we hold near and dear immediately seconds into the NCAA tournament.
That's what they got that going.
I remember. You think I don't remember Tommy Lloyd? You really think I don't remember that? You think I forgot about what happened when I picked
you to win the
national, when I picked you to win the national title last year?
Oh, buddy, then you lost to Princeton last year.
You lose to friggin' Princeton, who then comes and shoots like 90% against Mizzou. And guess what happens to my team this year? They don't win a single damn game in the SEC. So you think I forgot Tommy Lloyd? You're wrong. You're dead wrong.
Tommy, if you're listening, I'm sorry. I didn't know Pat would get worked up like this.
Tommy's listening on Twitch as Arizona closes out Long Beach State right now. So it's inspired them over the finish line. We're going to get to Denny's topic in a minute. But Gus Edwards, The Athletic's Daniel Popper, who has been on the show before, believes Gus Edwards will have, quote, a big role in the Chargers offense in 2024. And pretty hard to dispute this at this point, isn't it? Like, because it's a bad running back class, too. This is another thing I thought about Pat Crane. He pointed out, like, there's no one coming to basically steal early down reps from Gus Edwards at this point. Is there Kyle or Denny? And is it another year of Gus Edwards getting away with 754 yards rushing and 11 or 12 touchdowns as the clear lead back in a Greg Roman-led offense? Who wants to go first? I'm not teeing either of you up.
I got something. Post-merger, which I believe like 63, 66, if I remember correctly. Pat, that sounds
67,
like
67.
Ah, dang. Okay. So post-merger.
Merger might have been 70. Sorry, excuse me.
Yeah,
67 was the first Super Bowl.
I think you're right. Whatever. Late 60s, I believe, is post-merger numbers. Running backs, 500 carries or more. Where do you think Gus Edwards ranks all-time yards per carry?
Yeah. Oh,
God. Take a guess.
Hey, this is why it's so good to sign Derrick Henry. If a Jag like Gus Edwards can set all-time records, imagine what Derrick Henry can do, Kyle. Moving
on. Give me a guess, Pat. Give me a guess.
Ninth.
Sixth.
11th, then you're very close.
Denny wins the car.
And to be fair, like, yes, we all agree that's a very Lamar Jackson-esque stat. But the people who try to desync a running back's talent with their situation, I'm referring to at least next gen stats, also have viewed Gus Edwards very favorably over the years. Like, I definitely think his numbers overrate what he is. But I think he's capable of handling 150 to 200 carries between the tackles specifically, especially short down work. He was really successful at the goal line last year. And Pat, as you pointed out, they have very few options of talented running backs to add over the next 2 months. Like, the running back free agent pool is all but dead already. And the running back pool is the same way, just because it's a very weak running back class. I still think they're likely to add a day two running back. I think that player is likely to be better than Gus, but does he out carry Gus in week one? My bet would be no. So I think he will be fantasy relevant, especially early in the season. Maybe someone you could like pair with a running back we don't expect to be available in terms of either health or just usage until late in the season, like rookie Jonathan Brooks, or if you want to be drafting Nick Chubb, like maybe he makes sense as a pairing partner with Gus Edwards.
Denny, is Gus Edwards going to be your RB1 in every single league?
I highly doubt that the Chargers don't draft a running back and make that guy the RB1.
I think they're going to have to draft more of a complimentary type.
I mean, I guess it's possible. I'm going with Harbaugh wants to just get the band back together in several ways. He's already doing that with Roman and whatnot. I think Blake Corum could end up in LA somewhat, you know, and be the RB1 there. I will say, you know, if this Chargers team is as run heavy as I think it'll be, you know, bottom five and pass rate over expected, that sort of run heaviness, then Gus Edwards as a complimentary back will still, you know, get decent run, like decent touches and profiles as a natural big bodied goal line back. He scored a million touchdowns in Baltimore. So, you know, I think that he will be valuable. I don't think he'll have a quote big role. I think that that's overstated.
Denny, you've been saying since the second Jim Harbaugh was hired, they were going to go as run heavy as possible. Other than the Chargers getting rid of easily their two best receivers, there's been no evidence at all.
Yeah, I mean, right. The Chargers went from, I would say, like a top 10 receiving room, like giving credit for Mike Williams being healthy, which maybe, to be fair, don't do that. But like top 15, top 10, depending on how you view health, to bottom one or the worst maybe ever. Two. Like you could give them.
Sadly, not the worst ever. There's a lot of receiver cores that would have like killed for Joshua Palmer. There've been some bad.
They're definitely I think they're the worst this year. But I mean, the Browns. I think like Andrew Hawkins was the Browns' top receiver 1 year.
Dude, if you want to check out some of the last days, St. Louis Rams receiver cores, man. There have been worse groups than this Chargers group. I'll say that for sure.
But this Chargers group, I think, is 32 in the NFL right now. I'm pretty sure they are.
Now I'm motivated to see if that's correct.
But well, I mean, I would say the Patriots are probably worse, but they're
KJ Osborne would be the best receiver on this team, buddy.
Yeah. Kendrick Bourne would also be the best receiver.
Oh, yeah, Kendrick Bourne would for sure. Terms. Yeah, yeah.
There's some
Jalen Hyatt man. Might be the best. Darius
the Giants, they're getting in the mix. The Giants are in the mix.
No, I agree. Yeah. Giants are in the mix, but like we're begging the Chiefs to trade a fourth rounder for Darius Slayton. We're not.
I'll be honest. The Broncos are in the mix, man.
Oh, Courtland Sutton.
Oh no, Courtland's done, man. He's done.
Oh, 10 touchdowns last year. Courtland.
He's a tight end now. He's cool. He finishes at the rim. Yeah, scored 10 touchdowns for a team that won 8 games. Where's the parade at?
Courtland Sutton is Jerry Rice in LA.
It's true.
Absolutely. What do we think about Herbert in this environment?
I'm starting to get more down on the idea that, like, a month ago, I was thinking, okay, yes, we're not getting 700 pass attempts for Justin Herbert regardless of the defense, but he's Justin Herbert. He'll survive. And the receivers, they'll survive because they're talented. The more and more we go through this offseason, the more I think, like, oh, maybe we can't even mind passing game relevance from these guys because they, every step, we think, like, all right, yes, they're doing the Harbaugh thing. They're going to be hard-nosed. But how hard-nosed can you be? They continue to like try and prove me wrong. I know we haven't seen a snap yet, but every step we take, I think like we should be reasonable with our expectations. Like,
what if they draft Malik Neighbors? I mean,
I will start to change my course, but like once they draft Joe Alt, on the other hand, we have to continue down this path of expecting them to run an insane amount. This is kind of where we were with the Falcons last year. Like, oh, you shouldn't project league bottom pass rate over expected by a country mile for a team. Like, you'd have been right if you did that. You wouldn't have drafted the Falcons if you did that. And it was, I don't want to say it was entirely predictable, but if you had to peg a team in the last like 5 years to have a negative 15% pass rate over expected, you'd have picked correctly if you picked Arthur Smith. And we kind of feel like we're going down that road with the Chargers, where if you have to pick a team that is so aggressively balanced it hurts the passing game, they're positioning themselves to be that team. I agree, Pat. The draft could potentially change a lot, but it could also reaffirm everything we've thought for the past month.
And Herbert makes no sense in this plan. He just doesn't.
Well, I don't know about that. I think this might be really good for Herbert's career, to be honest, where he's never played in like a real offense. It's like an offense. They're always in crisis mode for one. They're always in like chaos mode. So no matter what, somehow every single game, the Chargers have to attempt 45 passes. And a lot of times this is like, wasn't good volume at all. Yeah. It was like the classic, like toxic volume. And he could honestly get on like the Russell Wilson or maybe even the Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
Or just even slightly better offensive sequencing and design. I know it's Greg Roman, but it's Jim Harbaugh. Jim Harbaugh.
I know it's Greg Roman, who the last time we saw him, Lamar was saying, Jim Harbaugh knew our plays every time.
Jim Harbaugh, you truly, going back to his days even at San Diego, or was that where he was at before Stanford? It's San Diego State, has always had super, they've always been super balanced, but really efficient. Always offenses where the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. Like that includes at Stanford with Andrew Luck. Very much includes in San Francisco with Alex Smith and Colin Kaepernick. Very much includes in Michigan. I think it's really easy to be negative because we know the attempts are going to crater. I think Jim Harbaugh could be like amazing for Justin Herbert's career because there's so much focus on Greg Roman. I don't think there's enough focus on Jim Harbaugh. Maybe Greg Roman's going to be calling that the on a play-to-play basis, it's Greg Roman. But this is Jim Harbaugh's offense, I'm saying, more than Greg Roman's. And I think it could actually be really, really good for Justin Herbert.
It'll probably be good for his career. I just mean from fantasy.
Oh yeah, fantasy. to be clear, this is not real football.
It might be Joker.
I think, Pat, a few more jokering events and you'll find yourself where I am. Because I was the same way. Like, obviously, Jim Harbaugh is incredible in the NFL and he's a good college coach too. And like you said,
he's the classic. He's had success everywhere.
Yeah, and he'll be good here.
Success everywhere.
He'll be good here. But
man, like, they're positioning themselves to be this year's like Arthur Smith team, and maybe they still win 10 games, frankly, at that sort of status. But I really do struggle to see a team that, like, if they end up going with like Joe Alt or trading back and not going receiver, Quentin Johnston, Josh Palmer as your top receivers, and you've dedicated so much money and so much of your franchise's hope to Justin Herbert. Oh, I just can't imagine being a Chargers fan. But to be fair, I've said that every year for the past 5 or 6 years.
Well, I
can't imagine being a Chargers fan because they don't exist. Sorry, Denny.
No, trust me. Folks, they exist and they are angry online.
The 17 of them are vocal on Twitter.
They will say extremely, extremely pointed things if you criticize their quarterback who will be paid not to throw this year. And you know, I do think this is good. I think this is the best time ever to be a Chargers fan because you're finally out from under the thumb of Brandon Staley. Maybe not ever. The Schottenheimer days were better, but Harbaugh is going to right this ship. They're going to go to the playoffs this year. They're going to be good. And for fantasy, they're going to stink.
And Sean McVay is going to be exposed as an Aaron Donald merchant. So it's never been a better time to get on.
I do not believe that. It's a bit.
I was going to say, you've been both sidesing Aaron Donald recently.
No, I do not believe that at all. Sean McVay, I think his coaching tree should disabuse any notion that he's a creation of Aaron Donald. By the way, I think I've already made this point on the show, but before you totally poo-poo Quentin Johnston in this offense, you have to remember, what did Quentin Johnston do against Michigan in the national semifinals in 2022? He caught 6 balls for 163 yards and a touchdown. You know that is absolutely seared into Jim Harbaugh's mirror. This Johnston guy can play. This guy can play.
Oh, yeah, sure. He's running routes. He's getting targets. And, buddy, let me tell you, we tried that last year.
Dogs are an important part of our lives, and keeping them protected is a top priority, especially against nasty parasites. That's why you got to check out NexGard Plus, afoxolaner, moxidectin, and pyrantel chewable tablets. NexGard Plus chews provide one-and-done monthly protection that kills fleas and ticks, prevents heartworm disease. Plus, it treats and controls roundworms and hookworms. That's a whole lot of protection packed into a delicious beef-flavored, soft chew designed to make monthly dosing easy and enjoyable. So the next time you're at the vet, ask about NexGard Plus chews. They're the one-and-done monthly parasite protection you want for your dog. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurologic disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventive.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Someone we're going to try it with this year is Bo Nix and Michael Penix, neither of whom are good, but seem to be the clear QBs 5 and 6 in this class. Denny, I'm just joking. They could. They're the kind of guys, they need to land in the right system. They need to land in the right situation where they don't need like immediate expectations. Kind of players, they're going to be dinged for how old they are and how much college experience they have. But it could turn into a positive if they're allowed to develop in like a slower way.
Yeah.
Denny, so what are your thoughts on Bo Nix and Michael Penix?
Right. So I wanted to bring this up because along with our Roto World colleague, Zach Kruger, I've been very interested in looking strongly into pressure to sack ratio. And, you know, as an indication of NFL success, because it seems to be highly correlated. You know, what part of the reason folks got really interested in Anthony Richardson late in the draft process was because of the that pressure to sack rate, which was very, very good. Not every single elite quarterback has a great a low pressure to sack rate coming out of college, but I mean nobody is better than Bo Nix and to a slightly lesser extent Michael Penix, and including like Drake May, Caleb Williams, and Jaden Daniels all have concerning to very concerning pressure to sack rates. Okay, Daniels is almost off the charts, really, really concerning. Caleb Williams isn't that, it's not great. I will say it's, I think it should be a huge red flag.
Caleb, I will try to explain away that he had to go hero ball mode behind that offensive line. I'll say.
So
he also had two first round receivers that he could have tried to target more often.
Yes. I think
he could have not had the happiest feet in the history of quarterback prospects. We can digress.
I'm not going to base this at all like film or whatever, but his statistical profile, I think, begs a lot of questions.
Oh, Denny thinks Caleb Williams is a bust. You just start adopting this persona.
All don't right. I'm not. Push. No. Bowers bust. Caleb Williams, I don't know. I do have questions. Anyway, let me start with Bo Nix. I'm going to be on my back foot here. I'm going to be on the defensive. But I'm just going to try to paint the picture of Bo Nix as a viable starting quarterback, a nice game manager, okay, in the NFL. So in 2023, Bo Nix led the nation in passer rating under pressure. He was he had the sixth lowest pressure to sack rate when under pressure. Okay. So in other words, when he's facing the pressure, he still is not taking sacks. Second highest passer rating in a clean pocket, trailing only Jaden Daniels. And Bo Nix had zero turnover worthy plays on 65 dropbacks under pressure. He had 4 turnover worthy plays on 470 dropbacks. Last year, 4. Now his A dot was that of a guy who's checking down. Okay, he's not flinging it downfield. That's the big difference to him and Michael Penix. Penix was among the nation leaders in A dot against pressure and in from a clean pocket. So he is very different, but still very few turnover worthy plays for Penix. He's not taking sacks. He's not killing drives. That's why I think these two kind of quietly profile as starters, like right off the bat.
Well, Bo Nix solved college coverage schemes with his 10 years in the NCAA.
I do it. Yes. The age is something, I will say.
It is something.
I'm not saying that they're better prospects than Daniels and May and Williams. That's not.
Well, go ahead and say it if you want to. Go ahead. We'll let you.
I won't say that. Because I want the respect of the audience, but but what I'm saying is I don't know if the red flags for the top three prospects would I don't know if that to me would scare me off to the point of saying, you know what, I'm just going to wait for Nix. I'm just going to wait for Penix.
I don't mean this to be damning with faint praise, but I feel like they enter the league with kind of the same reputation that Desmond Ridder did, highly experienced 4-year starter at Cincinnati, was viewed as like a finished product. I think both Bo Nix and Michael Penix are easily better prospects than Desmond Ridder was.
Yes,
sure. Kind of one of the closest, most recent comps that I can think of for them. And that I, as much as I like to joke about them being like automatic busts, I think they're better day two. Like, let's see what, like, I think they're better day two bets than a lot of these types of
prospects. I do too. Right. And I'm not, please don't mistake this for me calling for a top 10 team to pick one of these guys. It's not that what I'm saying. I do think that they're way, very much worth a day two pick. Also, Knicks. Oh, you just, what were the point? What was the point you making? And Ritter.
You're saying Knicks is a screen merchant.
He is, definitely. And he would need to be in a system with lots of easy throws, lots of checkdowns, and those exist. He can find his way into one of those. So Ritter, I did look into Ritter because I thought the same thing, Pat. Well, this is the same thing I heard about Ritter. But here's the thing. The pressure to sack rate was off the charts for Desmond Ritter. We're talking about 28% for him. He took a sack on 28% of his pressures. That's way, way, way higher than Knicks, who was like 4%, and Penix, who's like 6%. And I think that's the sort of thing that makes a difference, because those sacks, they make a huge difference. They kill the drives. The offensive efficiency goes down the tubes when these guys are taking sacks.
Well, they don't just kill drives. They kill your career. So if you're a second or third round pick, your leash is going to be pretty short. And you're coming out there and taking 5 sacks every week, they're just going to move on pretty quickly.
Yes.
Even when you get a season-long opportunity like Sam Howell did, they're just going to move on. If all you do is take sacks, like, all right, cool. We're moving on.
It's why I think that – Justin Fields has no chance at being a long-term starter in any offense in the NFL, because he cannot, for whatever reason, I don't know why, but he cannot stop taking sacks. And that makes the difference. Like, it doesn't have to be super complicated. Sometimes it's just that.
Yeah. He's got this fundamental flaw that like systems really struggle to deal with. Cause like, especially in terms of his pressure to sack rate or just his overall sack rate, we know quarterbacks have a lot of control over that. Obviously, like getting pressured isn't part an offensive line stat, but even moving into pressure and working your way towards pressure is something a tendency quarterbacks have. And man, Justin Fields has it. And then he takes the sacks when he gets into the pressured situation. So I think I hope he can change his game, but he has to. He can't exist the way he does right now.
On Penix real quick, because I was heavy on Knicks, but I just wanted to get this on Penix. Last year, second lowest rate, second lowest turnover worthy rate against pressure. He was first in average depth of target under pressure. So like I said, he was able, you know, with that big arm, he's able to push the ball down the field, even when being blitzed, even when under pressure. I think that can very easily translate in the NFL. I am like begging the Dolphins to draft one of these guys.
Wow.
I think the Dolphins actually be a great fit for Penix. One,
I was saying Penix, no, please don't just give me Bo Nix, like Tua, the even more evolved version of Tua.
I think Penix is that guy, especially because Bo Nix is mobile. His stat line in 2022, which was something like 500 yards, 13 touchdowns, is the entirety and then some of Penix's career as a rusher. He also did better under pressure. Not to say Penix did bad under pressure, but he did better under pressure than Penix did. He also did far, far better when he was forced to move off of his set feet than Penix did. All of the, well, he doesn't run. He can't really move off out of the pocket, but he's a great when he's got, you know, guys open and he has extreme talent receiver. Those are the hallmarks of Tua, but in my mind, it's a Tua backup contingency plan. It's not this is the successor to Tua. I'm trying to match the skill set of Penix or Nix to Tua, and a guy who thrives at deep and intermediate throws, but also has had a ton of talent to throw to and doesn't work well when the system breaks down. That's Penix to a T, I think. But to your point, Pat, I'm kind of conceiving as Penix is a backup plus to Tua, whereas in the end of the day, we want to see what Mike McDaniel can do with a Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes level talent. That's, of course, in our wildest dreams.
Yeah, it's not happening for quite a while. Sounds like you're maybe suggesting, by the way, Tua needs to sign his extension for the Dolphins to make their day two picks.
I would
say, I mean, if I were Tua, I'd work on the extension right now, because on the other hand, if I'm the Dolphins, I'm letting him play this out, because you stole the franchise tag is not just
seriously. Like Tua is like the most obvious don't force the extension with this guy quarterback ever. Like, just let the situation play out. If he Kirk or Dax you, just deal with it when it happens. But you do not need to force the situation.
He's not, and he's not, by the way, I can answer that question. He's not going to Kirk or Dax anybody.
Yeah. Like, if you're the Dolphins, you say like, all right, Tua, start beating good opponents, make some moves in the playoffs. And next year we come back to the negotiating table where we're still like right now, the speculation is that he will be the highest per year player in the NFL, like 5 years, 250 mil. We'll talk about that next year, but like you have to prove it to another level. And not to say he wasn't incredible in the regular season last year, but a lot of that damage came against week. In totality, he was incredible. But when you look at how he played against in the biggest game,
a guy threw like 10 touchdowns after Halloween.
I don't think he was good last year.
I mean, he was like the second or third best QB in EPA per play, yards per attempt, QBR, like all that stuff. But that's what I'm saying is like you zoom in and you say like, okay, prove that you're that good in all facets, not just against the Broncos, not just against these other weak teams.
Yes.
Do it when it matters most. He didn't do it against the Chiefs.
Well, I mean, just create.
Literally anything out of structure. Like, don't make Jimmy Garoppolo look like friggin' Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Yeah, right. I'm
the Tua guy on the show, and I'm saying give him a year, franchise tag him if you have to. Like, that's your leverage spot. But, like, I would not personally commit to a long term as of March 21st, or 2024. And I think maybe it makes sense for them to take a like upside backup Knicks or Penix in the event that they don't see what they want to see in fall of 2024.
You don't have Dolphins. If you're listening, you don't have to do this. Okay. You can instead get a rookie in there and have a nice little Super Bowl window. Your window's closed if you go with Tua long term.
Dolphins, you don't have to do this. Arizona, you don't have to leave Tommy Lloyd on the tarmac. We got very, very fired up at the end of the show. Uncorked a long one from mid-March, but really, really good stuff from Denny and Kyle. Really good stuff every show from Denny and Kyle. More good stuff from them next week when we're back with the Roto World Football Show on Tuesday. So for Denny Carter, for Kyle Dvorak, I'm Patrick Daugherty. Thank you so much for listening. Best of luck with your brackets.
Dogs are an important part of our lives, and keeping them protected is a top priority, especially against nasty parasites. That's why you got to check out NexGard Plus, ofoxaconazole, moxidectin, and pyrantel chewable tablets. NexGard Plus chews provide one-and-done monthly protection that kills fleas and ticks, prevents heartworm disease. Plus, it treats and controls roundworms and hookworms. That's a whole lot of protection packed into a delicious beef-flavored, soft chew designed to make monthly dosing easy and enjoyable. So the next time you're at the vet, ask about NexGard Plus chews. They're the one-and-done monthly parasite protection you want for your dog. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurologic disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventive.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.